We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that shit. We gonna see him soon. You feel me?
Okay. Fuck. Ow. What a week. What a week. Since our last podcast, the Rams went from coming off a rough loss to the Titans to signing Odell Beckham and everybody saying they're about to win the Super Bowl to getting the shit kicked out of them by the 3-5 San Francisco 49ers. Johnny, how are you feeling, man? How are you feeling?
Short answer, like shit.
You know, I feel like usually we're doing the pod pretty late in the week. I mean, I feel like usually I would rewatch the game, and that was not a consideration whatsoever this week. There is no fucking way I was going to rewatch this 49ers game. I will never watch
that
tape again.
You must be a sadist. You'd have to be a sadist to like that.
You know, I feel like I put a decent amount of prep into this podcast every week. I try my best. Absolutely fucking not. This is the Butting Heads podcast, part of Ramsock Radio, proud part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, sponsored by Tick Pick. You know, usually I would do an ad read about how you got to see the Rams play in person and get your tickets on Tick Pick. But I'm going to say that you guys should go see, like, the Lakers or the Clippers or the Kings or whatever other non-football team you live near before I recommend buying tickets to this fucking shit show.
That's coming from a Sixer fan.
You know, I'm trying to go to the Sixer game next week, and the entire team has COVID. So, like, I'm waiting to see if Embiid gets cleared to play. So, if I go to that game, hell yeah, I'll use Tick Pick to get my tickets. Anyways, Rams are heading into the bye week. There's no game to preview. We don't really want to sit and talk about this 49ers game again for 30 minutes. So today we're going to do a position-by-position, discussion about how we feel about the positions on the team going into the bye week, what we think can improve, what we're concerned about. You know the drill. I do think we should talk about the game a little bit, and I think we need to start with this, Johnny, because this is butting heads. For all of the special team sins that this team has made this season, and I don't think this is necessarily on the special teams as much as it's on the coach, but that fucking fake field goal they ran, I don't even have words to describe my disappointment of that play.
Yeah, it's... I don't even know where to begin on that one. Like, the execution, the absolute decision to go after that, it's just awful all around. I don't know in what universe that decision, first of all, made sense. And second of all, did they even, like, were they kind of just, like, kind of wait and see what happens kind of thing? Because it clearly didn't look like they were ready at all for that play. It just was not a play that ended very well, not executed very well. It was kind of, like, on the fly, it seemed like.
It's 4th and 8. You're in field goal range. The other team is destroying you and is about to get the ball going into half, or they're going to get the ball after halftime. Like, take the points, obviously. And if you're going to go for it, go for it. You know, like, we've advocated for fake punts and stuff like that because in the past, fake punts have worked for the Rams especially. And, you know, when they line up in fake punts, even if it doesn't work, I would be more forgiving on it. Fake field goals rarely work. Like, I'd have to look at the stats, but, like, there's a reason they barely happen because it's such a difficult play to execute on. And for a team like the Rams, John Wolfer's not your holder. It's Johnny Hecker. I mean, we know he could throw the ball a little bit, but a fake field goal is a lot harder to execute than standing back and just launching the ball to, you know, the wide. I remember what the position is called on special teams. It's very late over here. You know, the wide out guy, but they call a fake field goal and throw the ball 2 yards down the field to Kendall Blanton, who predictably gets tackled. McVay after the game did say, in hindsight, it was a pretty silly decision. But I mean, good Lord, man. That was, in a game full of mistakes from him, that was the biggest mistake.
It's such a puzzling play. Like, why don't you just take the points? Like, it seemed like a no-brainer to me, especially considering that Frisco got the ball in the second half. And as it is, even if you took the points, the Rams would have been down still by, you know, a considerable margin. And yet, you put yourself in an even deeper hole. I don't know. I do know. I know that this probably wouldn't have mattered a whole lot in the grand scheme of things because the Rams just got their asses handed to them point blank. But at least, you know, give yourself a fighting chance, you know?
Yeah, like in theory, they kicked the field goal, they get it. Even if what happened, you know, the 49ers punt right away, so it's a 2-score game, you get the ball back. You run a just fucking abysmal 3-and-out. Pretty sure they threw a slant to Daryl Henderson on 3rd down. And then the 49ers get the ball, drive down the field, but we hold them to a field goal. So then you get the ball back, and it's a 3-score game with 4 minutes and 38 seconds left in the third, where if you kicked the field goal, it would have been in 2. Now, granted, they opened the second half with 3 consecutive 3-and-outs. So, no, in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't matter. But you shouldn't be setting yourself up to expect your offense to go 3-and-out 3 times in a row. Especially in a game where, you know, in the first half, all things considered, when they didn't turn the ball over, they were not playing poorly in the first half. I don't know what the fuck happened in the second half. But you got to put your team in a better position to win than that.
It's just like they gave up in the second half. You would think that because at least in recent years, the Rams have done a great job in, you know, kind of evaluating what happened in the first half and adjusting in the second half. There was no adjusting in this second half. It was a total shit show. It's like they were better off just calling the game at halftime. It was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good place to pivot to before we get to the positions. Just the way this team is coached in general, you mentioned there's no pivoting in the second half. And it's a thing where if you really look deeper into it, into Sean McVay's tenure here, the team never adjusts. He's 42-0 in games where they're leading at halftime. So he's great with playing with the lead, but that means he's 8-24 in games where he's not leading at halftime, which is not great. I mean, obviously you're losing, so you have a better chance of losing in the second half. But it's almost like a recurring thing, and especially this season, you know, given the last 2 weeks especially, they go into halftime getting their ass kicked. Same with the Cardinals, too, and they come out in the second half and don't look like a team that's going to win the football game. The only real time, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the only real memorable game where they were getting their ass kicked going into halftime and they came back was Buffalo last year. It's kind of a recurring thing, and it's frustrating, especially McVay, because, like, we know he's a great football mind. He's proven time and time again that he's a great coach, but the variance between his teams week to week, and this game there was a lot of mental errors from players, a lot of uncharacteristic drops, but the play calling in this game was bad. The big field goal was unbelievable. And defensively, I know it's not his unit, but there was no adjustments whatsoever to these games. And when you look at the flip side of who we're playing, we've lost to the 49ers five straight times now, and only one of these three seasons they actually had a good team. You know, they have been bad, but we're a much better team last year and they swept us, and we're a much better team this year and they just kicked our ass up and down the field. On a scale of 1 to 10, like, how much do you trust the Rams coaching staff right now that they're gonna be contributing to wins and not contributing to losses?
If you're as an entire unit, I would say that the Rams are still a very solid coaching staff. They're clearly not perfect. I still do trust Sean McVay, although I'm going to choose to look over this game or even against the Titans. But I'd be lying to you saying that I am not concerned whatsoever. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say I am about a 6 in terms of concern, because I don't know. Like, Sean McVay, you know, he has this kind of mantra of, you know, just saying that, you know, in retrospect or in hindsight, well, that's true, I suppose, with everything, but we need you to have the foresight, you know? This isn't about, you know, experimenting and adjusting. You know, this is a team that needs to win now. We're set up to win now. Our front office has made this team to win now, because later is probably not a great option. And this only really works if we start winning, you know. And now it's a little early to push the panic button per se, because in all terms and purposes, you know, the Rams still have a very good record. You know, they only have 3 losses, and you know, 2 of which came to really great good teams. 49ers aren't really that great of a team this season, but what can I say? You know, the 49ers have had the Rams number for the past couple seasons. So that's no excuse, of course, but it's just amazing to me, because I feel like the 49ers did nothing complex. You saw what was coming each play, especially on the defensive side of the football, and yet they did nothing to really stop them. And even more puzzling, the only time that they really stopped them was, you know, foolish mistakes on the 49ers part. So, I think they'll be fine, but clearly you have teams that are going to figure this out, that the Rams can't defend certain, you know, offensive packages and schemes, and they're going to use it against them, just like how the Packers adjusted their offensive scheme last year in the playoffs. So it's a concern. I would put it at a 6 at the moment.
It's tough too, because yes, the Rams are going to be fine, and yes, they're going to win enough games to get into the playoffs, but we don't want them to be fine. This is a team with Super Bowl aspirations, and yeah, you mentioned they're 7-3. They have 2 losses to 2 really good teams, and this is a divisional game. Weird shit does happen, sure. But you look at their wins, they beat the Bucs, who are a great team. Beyond that, they beat 3 really shitty teams in the Giants, Lions, and Texans. They beat a pretty shitty team in the Bears. They beat okay teams in Seattle and Indianapolis, although if you were watching those games, both of those teams had their starting quarterbacks go down late in the game. I mean, they would have beaten the Seahawks anyways, but the Colts had a really good chance of winning the game, and then Carson Wentz got hurt, and obviously we beat Jacob Eason. Yeah. So it's not like, yeah, they beat the Bucks, but it's not like this team is racking up high profile wins, and their 3 losses were not just losses. They were manhandlings. You know, like the Titans game was closer. The box score is closer than the game looked, actually was. The Cardinals game, the box score was closer than that game actually was. This game, the box score was probably closer than the game actually was. It's, you know, we're not this team. Yeah, well, it's like you look at the second half of the year. We're going to rack up wins over the Jags. We're probably going to beat the Seahawks again and maybe the Vikings. But I don't know, man. I'm not ready to sound the alarms yet, but in terms of this team and their aspirations, the last 2 weeks have really pumped the brakes for me on this team going to the Super Bowl. You know, I definitely wouldn't say that they are the favorite in the NFC at all right now after watching the last 2 games. There are other really good teams in this conference. All right, guys. I mean, I would not dare tell you to go pay money to watch the fucking Rams play right now, but there are tons of other sports. Basketball's back, hockey's back, college sports are back, and if you need tickets to get anything, whether it's you want to go see the Rams again, or whether you want to go see the Lakers, or whoever your local team is, TickPick is the best place to get them. TickPick. It is the original no-fee ticket site, and the only one you'll ever need to get your tickets for any sport. I mean, TickPick got rid of the awful service fees that other sites charge, and they're going to guarantee you the best prices on all your sports tickets. If you don't believe me, find out for yourself. If you can find a better price than what you see on TickPick, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in your purchase price. So if you want to get tickets to go see the Rams or go see whoever you want to play, head over to tickpick.com/RTR, and you're going to get our special promo code, $10 off of your first pair of Rams tickets using TickPick. That is not nothing. $10 is great. And as we all know, I mean, we're done with fees, even more so than we're done with the team right now. But the Rams are going to come back. They're going to come back strong. If you want to get tickets to a game, you head over to TickPick, TickPick, avoid those hidden fees, and use our code RTR for $10 off your first purchase. I don't know, man. Let's talk about these positions. Do you want to start at quarterback and work our way down, or start in the other direction and do quarterback last?
Let's go quarterback, move down.
So, you know, we're not going to grade John Wolford in the limited garbage time he's played, but Stafford, I mean, I think there are 2 ultimate things here. We have seen the good of Matthew Stafford. He is a clear upgrade from Jared Goff. even with the bad we've seen, I have absolutely no regrets on making that trade. That was the trade they should have made, even if it doesn't work out long term. I still think it was the right call, and clearly looking at what Goff's done this year, not like he would have been the answer at all. That being said, he's made a lot of mistakes, a similar amount to Goff made, honestly, looking at those two the last 2 years. The difference is Stafford misses substantially less throws than Goff missed, but he's still tossing a bunch of interceptions. And I mean, in this game, he had two picks. One of them was completely not his fault. The other one was completely his fault. People will point to Odell stopping on that route. Even if he didn't stop, he was in double coverage. It's second down. You're basically punting the football. I'm satisfied with Stafford for sure. But, you know, back-to-back primetime games where he didn't play great. This game, I honestly think he played better than last week for sure, especially given the lack of Robert Woods and guys like, you know, Odell's just learning the playbook and Ben Skowronek is straight up not good. I give him a little bit more of a pass for this game, but we've come on this podcast a couple times this year and have said that he has to be better. And for this team to go deep in the playoffs, he definitely has to be better. I'm more confident in him being better than I am with some of the other concerns about this team for sure. I still have complete faith in him, but you're seeing sides of him that you don't love over the last couple games.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that you'd have to completely be ignoring a lot of things if you think that Stafford is perfect, because he's far from it. But I will say that there are a lot of instances, especially in this past game, where I feel like he looked a lot worse than he was. Now, again, not perfect. He clearly missed a few throws, made some pretty poor decisions. You know, as Steve mentioned, one of those interceptions was, you know, was clearly not his fault, and it doesn't help with all the drop passes, all the miscommunications with, rookie Ben Skowronek, who by all accounts should not be on the football field. we'll get to him, but I have to say this because I thought it was very humorous. One of the incomplete passes that Matthew Stafford tossed to Ben Skowronek, it looked at first that it was just a terrible pass to Ben Skowronek. And mind you, it wasn't the best pass out there, but I've never seen a wide receiver jump as early at a pass that Ben Skowronek did. Like, it almost felt like Ben Skowronek jumped even before the pass was made. I was so confused. I'm like, he already jumped. I'm like, I've never seen that before, ever. Not in college, maybe in high school, but it was so weird. I've never ever seen that in my life. Did you catch that, Steve? Because I don't know if I'm the only one that caught that, but I thought it was hilarious.
I don't know the specific player you're talking about, but I feel like he jumped every time the ball got thrown to him. And listen, the man's a seventh-round rookie. Like, we shouldn't be relying on him to do things, and I don't think we're going to long-term. But, yeah, it was not the best performance by him.
This is all true, but I had to throw that out there. But anyway, the point still stands that along with Matthew Stafford stepping up, it also has to be the entire offense, primarily at receiver. We can't have another game where it feels like literally every receiver on the field or everyone with a pair of hands out there played without them. Like, my God, I was so frustrated because I'm like, how are there so many drops? Did they butter the football, you know, before they tossed it in?
Because it wasn't raining.
Yeah, I was so confused. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
It was the worst game of Tyler Higbee's career, I think. Even though he scored a touchdown.
Yeah, that's another thing. But yeah, enough kind of ragging on the wide receivers there. Back to Matthew Stafford. So while I am concerned about Matthew Stafford, because, you know, this kind of goes, you know, beyond just last week's game, you know, looking back at the Titans game, he can't, you know, throw pick sixes, you know. And I'm more along the lines referring to the one against Tennessee, because the one in Frisco, that wasn't his fault at all. It just unfortunately happened. But, you know, those kinds of mistakes are going to come back and bite you and put you in a deeper hole, and then it causes the entire team, including the coaching staff, having to work overtime trying to figure out how to dig themselves out of this ginormous hole. And it all basically starts at quarterback making good decisions, not throwing the ball downfield, and basically doing a Hail Mary on the first drive. So, yeah, I am worried that he needs to make better decisions, but I am still confident that this is the guy. Certainly light years better than Jared Goff. I mean, if you don't believe me, just look at the winless Detroit Lions. They tied last week, but that still doesn't count as a win.
You know, bold prediction on the pod. I'm putting it on the record. I think they beat the Browns on the road this week.
That is bold.
I think that team is in fucking shambles.
I guess it wouldn't be the strangest thing ever. But man, you don't have a lot of confidence in your boy John Johnson.
It's bold. Yeah, John Johnson revenge game. All right, maybe I'm wrong. Well, we talked about the receivers a lot, so let's get to the receivers here. It's and to wrap it up on Stafford, I am a little concerned, but I would still bet my money that if this team falters in the playoffs, I don't think it's gonna be because of him.
No.
But it's possible. But looking at the receivers, it's been much reported. The day Odell put pen to paper, an hour later, Robert Woods tore his ACL at practice. Done for the year. Just fucking brutal. Hope he can recover. Get back to it next year. Get back to the player he's been. I have full faith he will. Love the guy. Wish him the best. But with him out of the picture, Tutu Atwell is done for the year. DeSean Jackson's not on the team. We got Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, and Ben Skowronek started in this game on Monday. I'm sure you agree. They played Skowronek a lot because they said a lot, Robert Woods and Odell don't play the same position. Well, Ben Skowronek certainly doesn't play that fucking position either. I would imagine they're going to bump Van over to Woods' position and have Odell take over Van's position, who's been more of like a deep threat kind of guy this year. I mean, that seems like the way it's going to go, right?
I'd imagine so. I think this is more because, okay, let's put it this way. So if Robert Woods doesn't have this freak accident, Odell's probably not playing in this game. And it would make the most sense because clearly there was a lot of miscommunication between Matthew Stafford and Odell. It wasn't just on that interception either. It was a few plays where it didn't look like Odell was in the right place. And that's really not a knock on Odell, as it is you basically asking him to learn a complex offense that Sean McVay is running in a weekend.
Right.
Like seriously, it was a weekend.
He played 27% of the snaps, 15 total, because they barely had any snaps in this game. And Skowronek played 76%. That is not going to continue to happen, especially given that they have 2 weeks to figure it out.
No, and the bye week couldn't come at a better time because of that. And, yeah, I totally stand by that statement that had Robert Woods not, you know, gotten into that freak accident where he, you know, got the season-ending injury, the Rams probably in no way start Odell or play Odell even. But since that happened, they're kind of thin at wide receiver as it is. So they kind of didn't have a whole lot of options. And yeah, moving forward, I agree that, you know, it'll probably be more Odell in the Van Jefferson spot and Van Jefferson in the Robert Woods spot for sure.
Do you think that, you know, we obviously, there's going to be some growing pains with the transition with Odell coming in, with Woods coming out. Woods does a ton of little things on this offense. He's a great blocker. He's a, you know, he just does a ton. They run the ball with him. Do you think by the end of the regular season, Odell can get adjusted enough to where this receiving group of Cup, Jefferson, and Beckham could at least be pretty close to as productive as the receiving core was prior to Woods' injury?
Well, that's kind of a heavy question. So if we're going to go overall, no, I don't. Because one of the more underrated aspects of Robert Woods is his blocking. And I just don't see Odell or Van Jefferson being able to pick up what Robert Woods, you know, was able to accomplish. And, you know, again, not necessarily a knock on Jefferson or Odell, but it's just it's really how good of a player and how underrated Robert Woods truly was. Now, mind you, he wasn't having the, you know, statistical year that he's had in previous years, but that doesn't really take away, you know, his presence on the field as a whole. Now, I think that given enough time, you know, again, this bye week kind of gives the Rams a lot of opportunity to, you know, develop some type of chemistry. I think with time, I do believe that Odell, Van Jefferson, and Cooper Kupp can be a formidable threat. And even sprinkling in a little bit of Ben Skowronek here and there, hopefully not too much. But, yeah, I think that if anyone can really get the best out of Odell, I think Sean McVay can certainly do that. And once they have enough time to go over the playbook together and learn it and be more sufficient with it, I think this is going to be a very threatening offense. Just it needs a little time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I think they could get back close to where they were at. You know, I agree. I don't think that they'll get to the level as blockers as Woods was, but I think they could be productive. And, you know, while Woods does a lot of the same things that Kupp does in theory, I think Beckham adds, he adds a lot to this offense. And Jefferson has been a good deep threat this year, but Odell's – if he's the player that we expect him to be, which, I mean, I would say is, tell me if this is fair, like 75% of what his best work was on the Giants at this point in his career. A lot of people think he's totally washed. I definitely don't think so. He's a playmaker. He's a deep threat. He's a guy who can make big plays happen. And that's the thing, you know, Woods will catch the ball and get you some yak in space, but Beckham's a playmaker catching the ball. So it's a new dynamic, and I'm excited to see them really roll him out. You know, it would have been interesting to see how they rolled him out with all four guys. I think it would have been like a 50-50-ish split with Van. Probably would have overtaken him eventually, because I don't think Odell's coming here to be the wide receiver three. The wide receiver four, I mean. But the Woods injury just adds such a different dynamic to it. And I do believe in the core. You know, we didn't even touch on Cooper Kupp, but nothing really needs to be touched on. He's unbelievable. And he's good enough to carry this unit no matter how they adjust to the Woods injury. But I certainly feel a lot fucking better that we have Odell. If this injury happened, and we didn't have him. I mean, we probably would have spent the whole podcast talking about how they fucked up not playing Deshaun Jackson if Odell wasn't on the team, because he's not here anymore and we could have used a depth. But I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll get back to form, or at least close to it.
Yeah, I would be entirely shocked if they completely fall apart. I just think they need a little time.
Yeah. It's going to be some growing pains for sure, but they've got a couple weeks to figure it out. It's going to take a lot for this team to miss the playoffs, and truthfully, I don't think the one seed is in range anyways. Running backs, I don't really have a ton of thoughts. Henderson's been great. A lot of people say they're not giving him the ball enough. He is 10th in the NFL in rushing attempts. He's top. I don't know what he is exactly in yards. I can tell you right now. He's 9th in the NFL in yards. You know, he's playing great. Sony's been fine in the limited role we've had to give him. But I feel good about this group. I don't really have anything to add. I think there's a lot of positions we need to dissect, and this isn't one of them.
Yeah, I don't have any concerns whatsoever. As long as Daryl Henderson stays healthy, that's probably my biggest concern. And but, I mean, you can almost say that about any position, really. But, yeah, Daryl Henderson, if healthy, is one of the better running backs in football, which is very comforting to know. And kind of the nice thing is there may be a possibility we see Cam Akers this year, which, hey, if Cam Akers does come back, that makes the offense that much more potent. And you know what, man? Sony Michel has been pretty decent this year. Maybe not as good as, you know, having a two-back tandem with Akers and Henderson. But you know what? He's done a serviceable job, and you know what more could you want?
Yeah, I could have lived without making the Michelle trade, but I wouldn't say that it was a bad trade by any means. They wanted Henderson insurance. He's given them that. He was productive in the game where he really had to play, and he's been a good backup. I don't love trading a fourth-round pick to get a backup running back, but it's fine. It's totally fine. And Henderson's been great. The craziest fucking thing looking at the NFL rushing stats is A, Derrick Henry is still leading the league in yards. B, he's still leading the league in attempts by 40 attempts. He has about 95 more rushing attempts than Daryl Henderson this year. And C, Lamar Jackson is 7th in the NFL in rushing yards. All of that shit is like mind blowing to me.
It really is. I mean, a quarterback is 7th in the league in rushing. That's something you gotta really keep in mind. And I don't even know if I'd have to go back and check, but I wonder if there were any years where Michael Vick was you know in like the top 10 in rushing yards.
No, I don't think it's even close. He's like shattering all of the quarterback rushing records. I think Vic had 1 year where he ran for 1,000 yards, and I'm going to try and look it up on the fly now, but he is I think that Jackson's the only other guy who's ran for 1,000 yards in a season.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all, because Michael Vick was kind of the innovator at you know, a rushing quarterback or a dual threat quarterback. You know, there were other quarterbacks previous that could, yeah, they could run, but they weren't, you know, becoming that legitimate dual threat where you weren't sure if he was going to run or pass. Pretty much, you know, with Lamar, he's pretty much you pretty much know he's going to run. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, how much is he going to run today? Is he going to do it, you know, 15, 20 times, or is he going to actually throw the ball?
I can't wait to play him. It's fucking unbelievable.
I'm nervous as hell to play him.
He wasn't a great throw passer last year. He obviously was an MVP year, and he's gotten back to form this year. Yeah, him and Vic are the only quarterbacks to rush for 1,000 yards in a season. And he set the all-time quarterback rushing record the year he won MVP. And I think he ran for 1,000 yards last year too, and he's going to do it again this year. He's well on his way. Well, he's not on the Rams, so no need to talk about him. I'm just going to make an example. I mean, do you want to talk about tight ends, or should we just skip it?
I suppose we should mention a little bit about the tight ends.
Higbee's been good. He was horrible this week. He's been good. Without Johnny Munt, they just completely stopped playing 12 personnel. Bryson Hopkins probably going to get cut next year. Jacob Harris is apparently not a tight end anymore. He's also, I think he's done for the year too, which is unfortunate. And Kendall Blanton is apparently our second tight end. So it's chaos behind Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, it's such an interesting turn of events, this position. And I mean, obviously, Tyler Higbee, nothing's changed. He's the number one guy, and for the most part, been solid except for last week. But, seeing the fact that Bryson Hopkins is a total bust and is probably going to be cut. Who knows? Maybe he'll be cut even before the season ends. But, he's totally been, you know, he's just there, you know? and if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, Johnny Munt is out, that I'm pretty sure the Rams would have just cut him at this point, because he's a body. That's really all he's been. And Jacob Harris not being a tight end was weird.
They were adamant that he's not a tight end. I mean, Craig, like, in the preseason, the labels don't really matter, but he was playing tight end, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so I don't know what made them just give up so quickly into an obvious project that they were like, yeah, he's not a tight end anymore.
There's probably two reasons. Number one, he's probably hopeless when it comes to blocking as a tight end. Number two, the Rams clearly needed help at wide receiver before they got Odell. And, apparently that turned into a curse, because the moment that Sean McVay labeled him a wide receiver, he got injured for the year. Yeah.
that whole thing was
three
crazy.
Wide receivers, by the way, if you count Harris. That's three wide receivers that are out for the year. Actually, yeah, I would consider Harris brutal. More of a wide receiver than Tutu Atwell, just saying.
So, the six guys that were on the preseason, like, list of players, seven, I guess, if you count Skoranek, four of them are are unavailable. Three of them done for the year, and DeSean Jackson got cut.
That's insane.
Insane. But that was a position we prioritized this offseason. So, great.
Back to the drawing board.
Great. Offensive line. This unit has been a little up and down, but I would say for the most part has been solid and reliable. I don't know what I can try and pull up what we're ranked in terms of sacks allowed right now, but I would guess we're pretty low. I don't really like, I feel like they haven't been getting sacked that much. 15 times they've been sacked this year, which is the fifth lowest in the league. So yeah, they've been solid in pass protection. I think they've been pretty, I would say good in run blocking for the most part. The decision to roll with Brian Allen at center, you know, while I'll still bang the drum that they should have taken Creed Humphrey, even if he wasn't going to start this year. Allen's been fine. Dare I say pretty good. He's had some lapses, as has Edwards, as has everybody on this line. They've all made mistakes, but they've been fine. And they should be, like, this unit is good enough for the offense to succeed. And I think the lapses have been less on them overall and more on the play calling and some of the mistakes and mental errors that the skill players and the quarterback have been making.
He was right there. Okay. It's just a must whenever I hear Creed Humphrey at this point. But yeah, I mean, the offensive line as a whole has been really solid. Really not a ton of complaints. You know, there have been a few instances where Austin Corbett and David Edwards haven't been as good as they usually are, but and I think this was mostly against the Titans. But you know, other than that, you know, I feel like even against the 49ers, they were, you know, decent. They weren't you know, horrendous like they were against the Titans. And I feel like that's really the only game I can really sit back and think that, you know, they were just a terrible offensive line. The rest of them, they were either really good or they were, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, they're very low on the list of reasons we lost this week.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And even, and I'll give credit to Brian Allen, because even though I say that I would really rather have like Creed Humphrey or something like that. And you know, that's even not even a knock necessarily on Brian Allen, because Creed Humphrey has already proven that he's a very capable starter, and that's coming from a rookie standpoint. So that's interesting. But Brian Allen has been really solid. And even last week, you know, he was kind of battling an injury. I thought he did okay, you know?
For sure. He's been solid. He's six on Pro Football Focus in terms of overall grades for centers. Humphrey's first. By a lot. He's right there. And, you know, even like, yes, Allen's been good, but he's a free agent this year. So is Austin Corbett. I would, you know, it's possible they bring both guys back. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to. So you'd have the depth rather than having more depth at a receiver position where, besides Odell, the top three guys are locked into contracts for a couple of years. We've been going for a while. We got to get to the defense. Because we've been going for a while, I think we should start in reverse order kind of here, because I think the position that we have the most to discuss is cornerback. And so I think should start there. It's a weird position. Jalen Ramsey has been unfucking believable. He is probably the best cornerback in football. He is one of the best players in football. And yet the secondary sucks ass. It doesn't add up. It just doesn't add up, man.
Yeah, to kind of piece together why. The Rams put a lot of faith in their draft pick in David Long. And, you know, we've kind of harped on this all season long, so long story short. Didn't get an opportunity this year. He finally does. And, well, he's been ass. Like, seriously, he's been awful. And, yeah, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, a guy like Dante Deon, who, to his credit, has really stepped up when he has to. But, you know, this was a guy that, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to even make the active roster.
He's been a camp body for what feels like a decade.
Yeah. And he actually gets benched in favor of Dante Deon.
Yeah, Dante Deon is the best player in the secondary, I think, besides Ramsey, obviously, and Williams. Like, he's been much better than Rochelle and Long, and it's not like he's been phenomenal. He's been fine. You know, hopefully the defense played better when he's back there. I think he was a surprise inactive for this game. By all accounts, it seems like he was banged up and couldn't go. So I think coming out of the bye, he's going to be the third cornerback. I'd honestly be stunned if he's not. But out of all the Rams, they lost six starters this offseason. They lost Troy Hill, John Johnson, Michael Brockers. Ibu Cam is technically a starter. They lost Austin Blythe and they lost Josh Reynolds. For whatever reason, the only one of these players they decided to actually go out and replace was Josh fucking Reynolds, and they replaced him twice. A lot of these positions, there were guys lined up. You know, Taylor Rapp, obviously for John Johnson, we couldn't afford him. With Austin Blythe, who was basically free, you bump up Ryan Allen. It worked out. Ibu Cam didn't need to be replaced. Michael Brockers, you had A'shaun Robinson, you had Sebastian Joseph Day, and you had Greg Gaines in the wings, and those guys have been solid. But the one, really, Troy Hill is miraculously, I think, easily the loss that's the most felt out of these guys. You feel John Johnson is really fucking good, but I actually think Taylor Rapp has been, like, for all the shit that the secondary ate in last week's game, I actually thought Taylor Rapp played pretty well. But, like, Troy Hill, man, we let him go. We paid DeSean Jackson the same amount of money that Troy Hill got paid by the Browns. I don't know if Hill would have come back. He said his decision came down to the Browns or the Rams. So maybe he just straight up chose them over us. Maybe we were offering the same amount of money. I don't know. But regardless, we lose him. We get Jackson. He's the same amount of money. We cut that dude midway through the year. We don't replace Troy Hill. We put all our eggs in the David Long basket, a guy who all of us liked out of the draft, but for 2 years now, he hasn't been able to earn playing time on a secondary that hasn't been that deep. You put all your eggs in that basket, you expect this guy to wake up and be a great cornerback, and he sucks. And as a result, they have to go to Robert Rochelle, who is a fourth-round pick out of a small school and has played like a fourth-round pick out of a small school. You know, if you have to choose between those two guys, I would rather play Rochelle because I think eventually something might be there. I don't believe that for David Long. And ultimately, Dante Deon, who has A, I don't know if we're pronouncing his name right at all, but B, has been floating around the practice squad for like 4 years, ultimately comes in and just wins the job to replace Troy Hill. And, you know, we'll see if his success can be sustained. I certainly hope it can, but he's certainly going to be a shaky player. And it's a Darius Williams. We don't even really have to harp on him, but he's been way worse this year than last year, but definitely not the root of this secondary's problems. It's tough, man. Out of all the positions on the team, I have the least faith that this one will be able to get their shit together before the playoffs. And that's saying something because the second best player on the team is a part of this unit.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually, because I think we all kind of anticipated that the third corner spot was going to be tough to find a replacement for, because Troy
Hill didn't replace him.
Yeah, they really didn't. And you know, to ask Robert Rochelle to, you know, replace Troy Hill is not fair. David Long, again, hasn't really earned anything. And then on top of that, you know, now you're bringing in Deon, which hopefully we're pronouncing his name right. But it wouldn't be the first time we didn't. So
we love him, though. I fucking love Dante, dude. He's,
oh, hell yeah.
He's filling in the Marcus Peters void for me.
I mean, he's a scrappy dude, and, you know, if there's anybody that's going to give you, you know, 110% out there on the field, it's going to be him, you know? So definitely no knock on him there. But I am nervous about the corner position because, you know, as we know, you know, Jalen Ramsey's going to do his thing, and while Darius Williams hasn't been the same Darius Williams as last year, he'll be sufficient, I guess. As far as anything else is concerned, that's where it gets a little nerve-wracking. But for the love of God, when we play the 49ers again, and if it actually matters, can we put Jalen Ramsey on Deebo Samuel?
Dude.
Like, and keep him there, you know?
If when we come out of the bye week, I want to see Jalen Ramsey guarding Davante Adams on every single fucking play, man. I do not want to see Robert Rochelle guarding him. I don't want to see Darius Williams guarding him. I don't want to see David fucking Long guarding him. I just want Jalen Ramsey, the best cornerback in the NFL, to be guarding Davante Adams, who is really there are decent players in their receiving core, but if we lose that game, that's the guy that should be beating us. If we put Jalen Ramsey on Davante Adams and get carved up by Randall Cobb and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, it is what it is, man. At least we know we made the right decision to not let Davante Adams tear up Robert Rochelle for four quarters.
The fact that that might be a possibility terrifies me. It really does, because I didn't think there was... I mean, I know that they've been moving Jalen Ramsey all over the field, and that's good because it has helped in certain regards, but clearly it was not working last week. You know, Deebo Samuel really made the Rams look like trash. And, you know, that's not to say that Deebo Samuel is not a great player, because obviously he's the second best wide receiver in football. But the fact is,
statistically, but yeah, he's a great fucking player. He's a great fucking player.
Yes. But the thing is, you're not helping the matter when you're sticking Robert Rochelle on him. You know, the man's a fourth-round rookie.
In that game, too, like, he carded everyone he got him. There's a play where George Kittle beat Leonard Floyd in coverage because, no shit, he's a fucking edge rusher. And I think, too, like, with Raheem Morris, who's been dragged a lot this year, a lot of it fairly, but I do think that personnel-wise, they didn't put the team – they didn't put him in as much of a position to succeed as like Brandon Staley was. When you play like Tampa Bay and they're rolling out Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, and they didn't play Antonio Brown, we played him this year, but theoretically, like, if you want to have Ramsey float on all those guys, like, yeah, you don't need to throw him on one guy when there's three legitimate threats in that team. But they don't really adjust his role for a game like this where, yeah, he clearly should have been shadowing Deebo Samuel. And when we play the Packers, he should clearly be shadowing Davante Adams. It's just tough. They're not really like a game planning for the teams they're playing. They clearly, I don't know, maybe they did game plan specifically for the 49ers they did this week, but I honestly hope they didn't, because that would make me feel a lot better that they just kept doing the same shit instead of coming up with what would have been the worst game plan I've ever seen.
Yeah, I sincerely hope this wasn't planned, because if it wasn't, or if it was, they really need to go back to the drawing board, because that wasn't it.
No, not at all. How do you feel the safeties have been this year? Obviously, we lost John Johnson. Taylor Rapp steps in. He's been up and down, but I think the last couple weeks he's played a lot better. He started the year a little rough. Jordan Fuller, kind of the opposite. He was fucking awful in this game. And he's missing a lot of tackles, which I feel like is bizarre. I have faith enough in this safeties, like I've said for a lot of the positions. I think they're good enough. They were better with John Johnson, but we prioritized Leonard Floyd instead of him, and Floyd's been great, so it's not necessarily the wrong decision. But I think this group has been okay, and I think they're definitely good enough. But very up and down for both of them.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I would say that the safeties went from a strong point last year to a very average point now. You know, there are times where they look pretty, you know, pretty good. And then there are times where they just look awful. And, you know, thankfully, I don't recall a game anyway where I'd say both players look terrible at the same time. But still, you'd like it to be a little more consistent where they at least play decent at the same time. And I feel like more often than not, there's always been, you know, at least one of them struggling. And that's disappointing. You know, Taylor Rapp, we weren't really sure how well he was going to adjust. Times he looked bad, but there are other times he looked pretty good. Jordan Fuller, I feel like they put a lot of responsibility on him, where, you know, even going as far as to name him a team leader, which, you know, again, he did a hell of a job last year, but I felt like he also had the benefit of playing alongside John Johnson. And this year, I think that they put a little bit too much responsibility on the guy. He's only a second year guy, and it's a little alarming to see how bad he's been in certain games. But I think he's still good enough to where, you know, the Rams should be fine with having both Rapp and Fuller, you know, being your starting safeties.
Yeah, and I have faith in Fuller for sure. He's been good more often than he's been bad this year. And I think by a considerable margin, but just like the missed tackles in this last game, I feel like he missed a lot. And yeah, I think he's getting a lot of pressure, but I don't mind it, because who else would have gotten these roles? You know, they don't have inside linebackers to do it, and they're not going to let Taylor Rapp do it. They're not going to put it on a cornerback, so I don't know. Nick Scott sucks.
Ouch.
I'm sorry, man. I hope he's not listening. And I hope he improves. If you look at the Pro Football Focus ratings for safeties this year, he's 89 out of 92.
Yeah, that about says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But at the same token, who do you put there to help out? Do you attempt to put in Terrell Burgess, who
I don't know.
He hasn't impressed at all, so yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I feel like Nick Scott's been like an okay tackler, but been bad in coverage. He's also being overtasked, I think. We're going pretty long on this pod, so we got two more positions to get through. Inside linebackers. Obviously, you lose your best inside linebacker in the middle of the year in Kenny Young. Kind of for no reason, but it led to the Von Miller deal, I guess, in a way. Ultimately, we end up using the cap space we freed up from him a little bit to bring in Odell, so it's not the end of the world. With the guys we have in the building, we have Troy Reader, who's been the primary guy. Ernest Jones has been there. And Trayvon Howard doesn't really play, but it's Reader and Jones are the two primary linebackers right now. I really hope that they lean into Ernest Jones being the main inside linebacker on this unit. I think he's shown plenty of promise. He got cooked a little bit in this game guarding George Kittle, but everyone on the team was also getting cooked by George Kittle. But I think he's shown enough promise to just earn playing time. And I think Troy Reader has shown enough of the opposite to that we should just make Ernest Jones our primary linebacker when there's only one of them on the field. But obviously when there's two of them, you're going to have Reader because there's nobody else you can play.
Yeah, I mean, not a whole lot to be said here. Troy Reader should be the second guy at this point. Ernest Jones, I realize he's a rookie and he's probably going to struggle at some point, but I feel a lot more confident in Ernest Jones than I do Troy Reader, because basically all Troy Reader is someone you can rely on is tackling, and even then he's kind of struggled from time to time. At least with Ernest Jones, while he may not be the best cover inside linebacker, I would feel a lot more confident in him than Troy Reader trying to cover tight end like George Kittle.
Yeah.
let
Jones take his lumps, because I do think there's something there. I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowler, but I think he could be a starting inside linebacker on the team for a couple of years. And the promise he's shown in coverage specifically, even though, yeah, he's gotten burned a couple times, but, you know, the prospect version of Ernest Jones seemed like he couldn't cover me. And he's made some good plays in pass coverage this year. Pro Football Focus has got his pass coverage grade as I lost my spot. He's graded out a 61, and considering he only has a 47 overall grade, that's pretty good. Troy Reader's got a 48 in pass coverage. Kenny Young's got a 53, so if you trust this metric, which, I mean, it's not perfect, he's been the best coverage linebacker this year, which, again, is not saying much.
No.
I hope they play him. I hope they continue to play him, because there's hope there at least. And if you're a longtime listener of the show, I rarely said that about this position since Corey Littleton left. Edge rushers, we get Von Miller in. I think he played pretty well in his debut. Played like 65% of the snaps, I think. He's clearly taking over as the guy, the starter there alongside Leonard Floyd. And then behind them, we have Terrell Lewis and Elba Okoronkwo. Justin Hollins is injured. If he comes back, though, McVay has even mentioned that he might play some inside linebacker because they have a lot less of a need here at this position with Von Miller in the group. I feel really good about this unit. And if this defense is going to, you know, get back to form and really become a force, it's going to be because these guys are lethal along with the interior defensive lineman with Aaron Donald, obviously, this pass rush needs to be giving teams fits. You know, if they're not, if this doesn't become one of, if not the best pass rush in the league, and it's not to say it's, you know, it is probably, but they need to be fucking elite every week to justify the capital that they gave up for potentially eight to 11 games of Von Miller. Hopefully he's here for a long time, but they've been good, and I just need to see them giving teams fits. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo shouldn't be having the game he had against these guys. And I have full faith that they will be very good in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think having Von Miller there is going to certainly make the defense as a whole better. I think part of what's going to make the defense so successful is just having this many, you know, elite pass rushers there available. And I think it becomes even better because having Justin Hollins there at inside linebacker, I think will be a godsend, honestly, because I know he hasn't been playing inside linebacker recently, but I feel at this point, you know, while Ernest Jones, we are pretty high on him for the most part, I think Justin Hollins would make a very good addition there, and hopefully speedy recovery to him, because we can definitely get there. And, you know, Oboe and Terrell Lewis, you know, stepped up from time to time, and, you know, that not much more that needs to be said, because I would say they're probably the deepest position on defense, I would say.
Yeah, though Lewis and Oboe have been really solid, and I think we would have felt okay. We probably would have felt pretty good about this group if they didn't make the Von Miller trade, but obviously they make that trade, and now the expectations skyrocket for this group. They've been solid. With the interior defensive linemen, lose Sebastian Joseph Day for the year, which is brutal. Greg Gaines played 96% of the snaps this week, which just doesn't feel like a real stat. But Aaron Donald is still Aaron Donald. Nothing really you could add. He's still one of the best players in the world. A'shaun Robinson and Greg Gaines, man, I feel like they've been pretty good. And talk about pleasant surprises, Copeland had a decent game this week. This unit, they've overcome the loss of Michael Brockers and then some, and even without Sebastian Joseph Day, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, losing Joseph Day was devastating because, you know, he was having a hell of a year. Certainly the best year, I would say, of his career. And you know, he's a guy that has really surprised people ever since he, you know, came to the Rams. And, you know, having him go down now just hurt quite a bit. But, you know, despite all of that, you know, Greg Gaines was someone that we were pretty high on when we drafted him. And it's kind of nice to see him, you know, step up when he needs to. A'shaun Robinson has certainly filled the void pretty nicely. And of course, you know, Aaron Donald doing what he has to do. So yeah, this unit has been pretty solid. So no complaints from me here. Although I don't know if we can really suffer any more injuries, because I think beyond this, it gets a little complicated.
Well, I mean, dude, Maurice Copeland was the third highest graded defender by Pro Football Focus in last week's game. So, no.
That's not saying a lot.
You got 84.
Don't get me wrong. He did well. But yeah, last week was embarrassing all around. I'm just going to say that.
Like, the bottom scores are comically low. Like, Robert Rochelle got a 28. Ernest Jones got a 29. Terrell Lewis got a 31 and Leonard Floyd got a 36. Like, that's fucking abysmal. I mean, I'm banging on my table here. I don't want anyone else to get injured, but as long as it's not Aaron Donald, I think they'll be all right. They'll certainly suffer from it. But, I mean, yeah, you suffer that anymore. I don't think we need to – we're not going to do punt returner on this podcast, although I will say the best punt returners of the year have all come from J.J. Koski. So I'm glad we finally fucking figured that out in a sense. He seems like he'll be fine. I think they picked the wrong punter.
Yeah.
Hecker was fucking awful in last night's game, dude. Every punt went like 35 yards.
Yeah, I'm starting to think so, too. It has...
I hate to say
it. I mean, to be fair, I would say that this was probably the worst game of the season. And before this game... I felt like, for the most part, he's done okay. Certainly not the Johnny Hecker that we've come to know and love. But, yeah, I will say that I feel like just everyone played like shit, and I'm hoping that he returns to form.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably being a bit reactionary here. But... You know, average yards per punt, which doesn't tell the full story. I mean, he's the worst of his career, 43 yards per punt. But, yeah, I mean, no matter what happens, I fucking love the guy. All right, I'm not upset that they chose him, even if it was the wrong choice.
It was. not to be mean, but it was.
Oh, man. I mean... Did we hit everything? Matt Gay has been great. No complaints.
What about Long Snapper?
I don't know the guy's name anymore.
I don't either.
But he's been good. It took years for me to learn Jake McQuaid's name. So
I actually remember Jake McQuaid's name because it kind of reminded me of 21 Jump Street.
And he was here for like a decade.
That too.
I'm gonna look up the guy's name because he deserves respect. Matthew Orzek.
Morrison?
O-R-Z-E-C-H. I've seen his name before, at least. I recognized it. Okay, well, this has been very long and there's not even a game next week, so if you don't have any parting thoughts.
Play better.
Enjoy the week off. Remember, the Rams are still 7-3. We're shitting on the team a lot, but the good news is they'll be in the playoffs. So when you're there, anything can happen. Follow us on Twitter at C Ribeiro, at Johnny596, at Talk Rams, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that. We're gonna see him soon. You feel me?